The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Monday, February 2nd, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, the folks at the Andersons in Champaign will have cash grain analysis. In agricultural news, Mexico says it is not dropping World Trade Organization consultations with the U.S. over country of origin labeling. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will have a report on woodchucks. And the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This Monday afternoon, prices settled like this. In Kansas City, March wheat, 5.93 down 8. May, 6.04.5 down 7.75. At the Board of Trade, March wheat, 5.63.75 down 4.25. July, 5.88.75 down 4. March corn, 3.70.5 down 8.5. May, 3.81.75 down 8.5. July, 3.92.5 down 8.75. December, 4.16 down 9. March crude oil, 41.85, is up 17 cents. The ethanol for February at 155 is down 5 tenths. And the RBOB for March is at 115.4, and it's off 11.4. March beans, 9.55.5, down 20.5. May, 9.65.75, down 21. July, 9.73, down 20.75. November, 9.25, down 20. March at 2010, 9.44, down 19.5. March soybean meal, 306.20, down 4.80. March soybean oil, 31.76, down 97 cents. February live cattle, the settlement, 83.90, up 190. March feeders, 94 even, up 300. February lean hogs, 57.95, down 60. And February bellies, 81.60, down 135. And that's Monday's settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago. Take a little bit more of a closer look at the outside markets now. March crude, the settlement 40.08, down 160. The April 43.92, down 221. February ethanol at 155, it was settled off 5 tenths of a cent. The March ethanol at 156, make that 5 1/10 cents for the February. The March at 156 1/10, off 2 8/10. March natural gas, 456 5/10, up 14 8/10. The March RBOB, 115 8/10, down 11. March heating oil, 134 2/10, down 9 1/10. March propane at 71 7/10, unchanged. Silver contract for March, 1241.5, down 15 cents. Gold contract for April, 907.20, down $21.20. The U.S. dollar trading at 86.07, up 23 cents. The CRB 216.34 is off 403. The S&P on a delayed basis at 818 is off 770. Taking a look at Mike Solis' two-state forecast tonight, he says mostly cloudy with light snow and flurries. Lows ranging from around zero in northwestern Illinois to 24 in southeastern Indiana. Tuesday mostly cloudy with light snow and flurries, especially in eastern Illinois and across Indiana. Highs ranging from 12 in northwestern Illinois to around 30 degrees in the south.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Joining us on the telephone for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we dive into the particulars, let's get a general thought about how you viewed the markets today, please.
Well, the overnight theme was lower due to better forecast of moisture in the southern hemisphere, and still holds tact here with the day map showing daily chances of moisture. How much we'll see as the trade gets that digested. Also coupled with that, we saw lower so-called outside values. The energies were lower, the metals were lower, the stock indexes were lower somewhat. So concerns about economic woes continue to keep a lid on investment ideas as the consumer or investor sort of got their hands in their pocket here trying to save money instead of spend money here on ideas of the future. Still uncertainty here, and there's quite a few articles on the Newswire today where consumer spending's down and consumer savings is up, Dave.
So what do we make of these outside markets being softer? And as we watched the markets, it appeared that as we got deeper into the session, the acceleration to the downside was greater.
Well, as far as the outside market goes, as a grain producer or grain merchandiser, I think you got to keep an eye on them. I wouldn't make a marketing decision on what a particular outside market does, but I would say it's probably going to give the overall theme on the state of the economy. So until we resume some confidence in these outside markets, it's going to keep a lid on things. A perfect example would be what group of individuals helped move the grain market sharply last summer. And the answer to that, in our mind, was the some of these hedge funds, some of these index funds, and the average investor who helped fuel the rally higher here this summer. Well, those people or individuals are probably a little bit more conservative today with their investment strategy due to the fact that you look at the stock market, what it's done. You look at some other investments, such as real estate, what it's done. And so the overall aggressiveness of the investors really tamed down or has pulled back. So, it warrants keeping an eye on the outside markets, maybe get a barometer on what's taking place. Now, one misleading thing would might be, the crude oil market, for example. We've got sort of a roll-down market. It seems crude oil drifts down to this 35-cent level or $35 a barrel level, finds support, and the lead contract goes off, and you got deferred to a higher level. So we sort of got that deferred at a premium, but even though the front end is trying to carve out some longer-term support here in the mid-$30 level, Dave.
Let's take it back to the charts and the technicals then, and let's begin with the soybean. Let's look at the March together. We made new lows, certainly for the month of February, but we're under the January lows as well. Does it give you, though, encouragement that the market did bounce off its lows today to finish mid-range and to finish roughly a little bit above the 38% retracement level from the December lows to the January highs?
Yeah, looking at the chart, we've got a downtrend intact. Depends, what type of time frame an individual or a trader is looking at. But for the most part, the trend is sort of your friend in here. But we're kind of encouraged by a couple different factors. One is the momentum indicators are getting down to the lower end of the spectrum. Secondly, as you mentioned, we did bounce off that low fairly good. It sort of felt like we ran some stops and found some buying interest. Then thirdly, on the technical side of the equation, is that we're due for a 9-10 week cycle low in through here. If you count back and do some cycle counts, 8 to 10 weeks has been sort of catching the breaks in through here. So all these technical factors could come in here and give the market reason to maybe regroup and have some type of recovery. Then fundamentally, not to mess you up here, China is back from holiday here this week, so they might view this break in here as a buying opportunity also, Dave.
That cycle could go as quick, could go as long as 12 weeks, though, correct?
You can stretch it out. Some of the best cycle people say you can, these cycles could be as much as 10% off, so you could go 10% either way of that. When you get a solid trend one way or the other, you need to fine-tune it according to which the trend is, right?
The corn market, though, seemed to break more definitively out of its formation to the downside, although much like the soy market, it seemed to catch around a retracement level in the corn. It was around the 50% retracement level and finished mid-range, much like the beans. Does this also bode well for the rest of the week?
Well, for the rest of the week, oftentimes we've seen the highs or the lows set on Monday here. So I'm willing to sort of make a little wager here, a bet that maybe we've seen the low here for the week and we see some recovery. So my good friend Wayne Nelson tomorrow should hopefully come in and say we've got a turnaround Tuesday and see some recovery. But we basically broke the shorter-term moving averages. We're making some lower lows. The thing about the corn is we're sort of holding above the January low. So if we can maintain that type of strength in through here, maybe we can ratchet back up to some point of midweek congestion there. But in order to go up and make some new highs, it's going to be awful hard for the corn market to do it on its own. The big sectors that's been hurt is feed demand. The inventory report showed that we're importing less feeder pigs from Canada. Poultry egg sets are still behind, so the overall feed demand's extremely weak. Export-wise, continuing to see export sales and export shipments below last year's level. Ethanol-wise, another plant went down in Wisconsin, so there's concern there. Then the fourth part, like we mentioned before, is the investor side of the equation. So, if a lot of concern out there, corn's got its work cut out here. The next major event will be the February crop report as we sort of fine-tune this demand and see if numbers come in as bad as the trade's starting to look at it.
How much feeder wheat is out there in the world at this point, do you think?
On feed wheat?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the exact breakdown on feed wheat in general. Depends what type of condition is and whether or not it could be sold as good wheat or not. But when you look at the world wheat ending stocks, we're sort of at the levels, we're sort of the highest levels we've been at for the last 6-7 years. The lowest number we saw was about 119 million metric tons. We're approaching this 148 million metric tons on the world number. So there is plenty of world wheat around.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Very good.
That is Kurt Kimmel, and he is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In agricultural news, USDA says that a weak Mexican peso relative to the dollar, plus low prices in Mexico, could lead U.S. customers to import larger quantities of Mexican sugar during the current fiscal year. USDA forecasts Mexican sugar exports will reach 574,000 tons during the current year, with almost all of it expected to be shipped to the U.S. On another front, Mexico's agriculture minister says the country has not abandoned a plan to begin World Trade Organization procedures regarding U.S. country of origin labeling regulations. The U.S. and Mexico will sit down on February 26th to consult about how the rules will be implemented and whether cool requirements have caused U.S. meat packers to turn away from imported Mexican cattle as a result. JBS Swift is continuing talks with the U.S. Department of Justice on potentially divesting assets to complete its purchase of National Beef Company. Talks remain stuck on some of the major points laid out by the Justice Department in its antitrust case. Wisconsin ethanol distiller Renew Energy LLC filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection as poor economics for making the alternative motor fuel and design flaws at its plant hurt the company. Renew is the latest in a string of delays, shutdowns, and bankruptcy filings that have shut 5% of U.S. capacity to make ethanol since October. U.S. capacity is now at about 10.6 billion gallons per year. European Union regulators will discuss again in a few months whether to allow meat and milk products from cloned animals into the food chain. Europe has yet to take a position on the technology. In October, a survey conducted at the Commission's request showed that most EU citizens have reservations about cloning animals for food. And the Commerce Department today says U.S. consumers cut spending for a sixth straight month in December, and their incomes shrank as well. The Commerce Department says spending decreased by 1 percentage point after falling by a revised 0.8% in November. That figure was previously reported as a 0.6% drop. Incomes fell by 0.2% after November's 0.4% decline, previously reported as a 0.2% decline. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
A University of Illinois study shows groundhogs, also known as woodchucks, may have a better survival rate in urban settings than in rural areas. As Todd Gleason reports, the study is being conducted in response to a request from the Illinois State Department of Natural Resources for current data on how woodchucks are responding to changing land use practices.
IDNR, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, requested a study of groundhogs, woodchucks, as University of Illinois wildlife ecologist Robert Schooley, because there was some concern about their populations. Two factors may be working in favor of woodchucks, or at least their survival in town, urban areas. They're getting used to humans being around, and so they just go about their daily lives when we're nearby, says Schooley, and it may be that they also have fewer predators, like coyotes, at least in town.
There was a sense that their numbers were maybe declining, and they just didn't know what might be causing it. One idea is increasing coyotes. And then there's just this general idea or concern about how urbanization might be affecting wildlife, including woodchucks.
The U of I has been tracking both urban and rural woodchucks for nearly 2 years. 41 woodchucks were initially captured and tagged. 22 of them are still alive. In rural areas, the researchers think most of the deaths were caused by a predator, like a coyote, because, well, they find just the transmitter and some remains. Four of the rural animals also died in hibernation. That happens if they didn't happen to have enough fat stores when they entered hibernation. The question, though, here is, does urbanization give the woodchucks a natural buffer zone to protect them from predators? Schooley says yes.
And it's just a hypothesis, but we do know that coyotes do not tend to spend a lot of time in the more urban areas. They are fairly common in rural areas and maybe in kind of the fringe of the urban areas, but you don't see much activity down in the high-density urban areas. Mm-hmm. And they're probably a prime predator of the woodchucks these days.
The study also looked at how far woodchucks travel from their burrow. In the city and residential areas, woodchucks have fewer natural predators and food available from gardens and plantings, but the flip side is that their habitat is fairly fragmented. The study found that urban woodchucks have restricted movements and consequently smaller home ranges than their rural cousins. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
us now with cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
What did you make of the break on the board today? Is this the beginning of a February downturn in the marketplace?
Well, I don't know if it's the beginning. January wasn't very nice to the corn and bean markets either, but we certainly are continuing that downward pressure here to start the month of February. That January 12th USDA crop report really took the wind out of the corn sales. The corn is basically looking for direction or strength from some other market. In and of itself, there's really nothing to get friendly in corn about at this point until we see that acreage report, and that's not for another 60 days.
No.
So we either have to have some weather problems in South America to get the bean market to go up or get crude oil to go up. Either one of those would probably help corn out. But in and of itself, the corn market is struggling, looking for something friendly to sink its teeth into.
Yeah, how easy has it been in recent days for the Andersons to ship corn out of their Champaign facilities?
Well, the good news is with the sell-off in the futures market, the basis levels have been getting better. Farmers are not willing sellers at these lower prices. They may have to be forced to sell later on, but at this point they're content to wait it out and see what happens on down the road. So the one silver lining to this lower futures market is basis levels are better.
Yeah, the basis levels are a little bit better. Do you anticipate that to continue? And I guess I wonder out loud a little bit if producers this year are a little bit more cash friendly, cash heavy than they've been in the last couple of years because of the good crops they've had, and thus don't need to do this mandatory selling as in previous years to meet the March 1 tax man.
I think you're exactly right. And plus, we're being clouded with the remembrance of the $5 and $6 corn from last summer, and it's beginning to look like we just need to forget about those kind of prices and get back to the good old days where maybe $3.50 corn is a good place to sell corn. I hate to say that, but you know it's beginning to look that way. That maybe we're returning back to some levels, you know, not quite as low as what we're used to, but certainly not to the $5 and $6 level. So we may need to reorient ourselves as far as what does constitute a good price. And I know inputs are higher, but some of these inputs are coming down, and so maybe slowly but surely we are getting back to numbers that we're more familiar with, unfortunately.
You have corn on the ground, and is it disappearing if you do?
We picked up our corn here in Champaign first week of December, so we haven't had corn out for quite some time, thank goodness, with all this weather. But there are quite a few ground piles still around. USDA says we're looking at 1.8 billion left over nationwide, and some people think if exports don't start picking up, that could be as much as 2 billion by the time we get to the end of the marketing year.
Anything else before we get to your prices today?
Oh, one more piece of bad news. They reported a record corn harvest in China, and China is now saying they may open up their export registration program, so that may allow for more corn exports out of China, which obviously is competition for U.S. corn exports. So just a little, and the weekly exports were not that good for corn and wheat. They were very good for soybeans, though.
All right, let's have your prices today, please.
Okay, cash corn is $3.62, new crop corn $3.81, cash beans are $9.49, new crop beans are $8.80, and new crop wheat is $4.69.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. Someone from the Andersons joins us every Monday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. It's Brewhog Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1659, Jan van Riebeck, the first governor of the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa, made the first wine from grapes grown at the Cape. He planted the vineyard in 1655. In 1795, the French government offered a prize of 12,000 francs for a method of preserving food for transport to the French army. It was eventually won by Nicholas Appert, who invented a successful method for canning. In 1820, Jean Bor died. He was the inventor of the sugar granulating process and founder of the sugar industry in Louisiana. In 1869, the removable steel plow blade was invented by James Oliver. In 1887, the first Groundhog Day was observed in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. In 1897, Alfred L. Crowley of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, patented an ice cream scooper. His basic design is still used today. In 1913, Carl Gustav Patrick de Laval died, a Swedish scientist and inventor. Among his inventions was the centrifugal cream separator and a vacuum milking machine. And in 1996, Ray McIntyre died, a chemical engineer who worked for Dow Chemical Company. He invented styrofoam. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, let's go right down to South America and get the latest. Are we looking for a pickup in precipitation in Argentina?
Yes, we are, Dave. The pattern across Argentina is turning more unsettled. This period of unsettled weather really commenced over the past weekend with a few isolated showers and thunder showers popping up, but we're seeing some action here today, and as we go through the remainder of this week, there will continue to be the daily development of showers and thunderstorms across Argentina, and it looks like the most widespread activity will be occurring later on this week, days of Thursday, Friday, even Saturday, when activity looks to become more widespread as an upper-level disturbance crosses the region. And as a result, we are going to see over a majority of the belt pick up significant rainfall and thus improve soil moisture and thus ease the, or at least stabilize the crop stress, which has been ongoing now for many, many weeks.
Eastern Buenos Aires as well, they've been pretty dry.
They are certainly in that window of opportunity here, and with the activity here developing, certainly they could receive some significant precipitation. You can't rule out them totally missing out because that is the nature of convective activity, but at this time it looks like a high probability of even your areas, the driest areas in Buenos Aires, receiving significant precipitation.
The heart of Brazil also getting rain?
Well, across the southern areas of Brazil, where western areas of Rio Grande do Sul, Paraná, have actually missed out on rainfall over the past several days, but they look to appear in line for significant rainfall and actually a very active pattern here setting up across southern Brazil. That's the same active pattern across Argentina. So as a result, we do see significant rainfall and another round of improvement in soil moisture reserves across southern areas of Brazil. And further up north, it looks like rain activity will become a little bit more spotty here this week, but they've been getting rainfall here off and on here over the past few weeks. So there's really no dryness concerns across the northern summer crop belt in Brazil.
Turn your attention to the Midwest. Looks like we're in line for a dry week.
Dry week and a warm week here as temperatures, well, starting off cooler than normal here today and tomorrow, then increase to above normal levels here by the upcoming weekend. And along with that, dry conditions across much of the Midwest, with the exception being here down one of the Great Lakes where some lake effect snows here will occur over the next 48 hours. The next chance of any precipitation in the Midwest appears to be around next Sunday and Monday, when a quick-moving front tracks across the region, the more significant precip event here slated for the middle portion of next week.
Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that's today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the audio analysis tab. This is Dave Dickey.